Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Time for the Friday gathering, as you can probably hear in the background there. This week I'm joined by Green Party Senator and Minister of State for Land Use and Biodiversity at the Department of Agriculture, Pippa Hackett. From our Athlone studio, I'm joined by Independent TD for Roscommon Galway, Michael Fitzmaurice. Aisling Maloney, political correspondent at the Irish Daily Mail. And Barra Rowntree, economist at the ESRI and adjunct assistant professor at Trinity College Dublin. A very good morning to all of you. Can I begin with the rail review first, please, Minister Hackett? I wonder, were you in the room when Eamon Ryan presented the rail review, and was the Taoiseach also in the room when Eamon Ryan presented the rail review? Because they both seem to have arrived at radically different conclusions.
Yes, I was. It was presented at Cabinet last week. And look, I think first thing to say, it is actually a very exciting review, and both Minister Ryan, I think, has highlighted the very positive developments and potential in it. Look, I think some were surprised.
But yet it makes the case for roads, says
well,
the Taoiseach.
Well, look, I think there's a little bit of surprise among some of us, that the Taoiseach chose to emphasise the roads, but he has, very positively welcomed the review also, and has encouraged people to read it, and they should read it because it is exciting. There's 30 recommendations in there. We're talking about a transformation of our rail infrastructure here. We're going to have new routes, faster trains, more connectivity, upgrading of existing lines, new lines put in. We're going to develop the Midlands of Ireland in terms of train connectivity. And I don't think across the board, all
on paper. Because if the Taoiseach's sentiment or apparent feelings on the subject were actually translated into political will, well, then none of it would happen. We'd just keep on building roads.
Yeah, but I mean, look, we are in a coalition, a three-party coalition. We all come from different points of views. In one sense, that can be challenging, but also there's opportunity there. And I think that's one of our strengths, I think, as a government, that we have those diverse views and that we have agreement. We have a programme for government commitment to 2-to-1 spend roads versus public transport. The other way around. Public transport versus roads. That commitment is there. I don't think anyone across government is against improving the rail infrastructure, not only for commuters, but also the potential in relation to freight as well. You have 70% of port traffic.
Surely you of all people can't be in favour of building more roads, because, study after study just proves that as soon as you build a road, what happens is it gets clogged up with traffic.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why the favour is towards public transport. We have really had 100 years of, people will have seen those maps from 100 years ago of the rail infrastructure in Ireland from the 1920s. We had the most extensive rail infrastructure.
Is that your dream?
I don't think we're going to get there really anytime soon, but I think improving what we have, we have seen a demise of rail infrastructure over generations now. We have seen certainly an increase in roads, but look, increasing roads, as you say, does bring more traffic, does bring more, particularly in the light of the climate challenge we face, it does increase our carbon emissions. We do need to maintain the roads we have, though, and we are supportive of
but he's talking about building new roads.
Yeah, we are supportive of building things like bypasses around towns to improve the town centre viability.
Michael Fitzmaurice, are you a rail or a road man?
I'm both. I think you need both. If you look at Ireland years ago, Philip, we had rail when the country hadn't a penny. When you look at the likes of Sligo, when you look at the likes of Clare Morris and places like that the minister would be familiar with. But you need both. And I totally disagree with your point, Philip. I think that it's an outrageous comment to say you clog up roads when you build more roads. When you go down the motorway from Dublin to Kells, does the people in Monaghan not deserve a proper road? Do the people in Sligo and Mayo, if you're coming from Galway, does the M20 people not deserve a proper road? It doesn't mean that people don't go up and down roads just for the crack. You need to put safety at the forefront of roads, and a lot of those roads needs building as well. But on top of that, a child would know. And 10 years ago, I remember going into the door, the Western Rail Corridor, and I'm sure the minister would be supportive of it, we would have spoke about it. But there's a big problem, Philip. It's like a fantasy book when you read this report, for the simple reason. To electrify our trains, even what we have at the moment, I know we have diesel electric at the moment, but if you were to electrify to Galway, if you were electrified to Cork, if you were electrified to Belfast and Limerick, it could cost €3 billion at the moment. If you were to put in the infrastructure that's required, and I believe it's needed, because I'd be very much in favour of PPP done properly, and may I say done properly, that we need to actually invest in the likes of the trains, but we need to invest in high-speed trains, because the day of a yoke banging up and down the track at a slow pace is gone, and we need to make sure we do that properly, because that's the only way.
Sounds to me like you're behind Pippa Hackett every step of the way on this thing.
Well, I'd never say I was behind Pippa. I'd always say I was in front of her. But anyhow, the reality is that in my thoughts that I'd be way in front of her in things I've said. I've said this 10 years ago. You didn't have to spend millions of euro. Are hundreds of thousands anyhow in doing a report. It's common sense what's required. The fines, that's gone on for years. And you know what, Philip? The sad part about it is that successive governments took the likes of the West of Ireland out of the TIN-T funding for many years, and that funding needs to go back into that area to make sure that we develop the infrastructure, not alone there, but as I say, we need to finish off the roads as well for the people of Ireland.
Barrow Rowntree, if you want to keep a growing population being moved from A to B, and if you want to meet our climate obligations, is this the way to go about doing it?
I'm not sure it really is. So, the deputy mentioned there, it's kind of common sense, we all know that this is the right way forward, but we have a public spending code, and that says what we should do when we're evaluating capital projects is to have a thorough, rigorous cost-benefit analysis. And for the projects that are discussed in this rail review, buried in the back of the reports and appendices, there's a variety of estimates of these, what are the costs, what are the benefits, including things like the environmental benefits, the benefits to people in being able to get places more easily. And if you look across all those estimates that are in there, and there's about 20 or so, only one of those is above one. So for only one of the packages that they examined, only under one of the methods, do the estimated benefits exceed the costs. And so if we're asking the question then, should we be spending a billion extra a year on something to get us towards our climate targets, something to improve the public transport in this country, is what set out in this rail review the best way forward? It doesn't seem like they've made a strong case for that in what's been published. Maybe there's a stronger case for doing more on buses. Maybe there's a stronger case for doing more on cycle lanes. Those kind of things have been shown to have very high...
What about light rail then, as opposed to intercity rail?
Absolutely, those kind of things. And then even if you want to move away from transport, like if we're going to spend a billion extra a year on capital spending, maybe is retrofitting houses not a better move in terms of meeting, again, just the targets that we have in terms of climate change. So again, it's a very ambitious strategy.
Okay. So hang on a second. Just one second, and I will let you back in once I clarify this with Barra. Are you saying the Taoiseach's right?
No, well, I'm not sure that we've seen that the cost-benefit analysis for roads is any higher than what's there either. But rather, what I'm saying is that if we are looking at spending what is a really sizable figure of an increase in capital spending of a billion a year, is this the right area to spend it in? I'm not sure. I don't think there's been anything that shows that the roads is either, but it's not clear that what's set out in the rail review is either.
Before I let you back in there, Michael, Aisling Maloney, does the Taoiseach's response to what was set out painstakingly by Eamon Ryan show that we're already kind of into electioneering mode?
Yes, absolutely. And, you could, if this was maybe at the start of the government's term, maybe there would have been a more of a unification around this message, because what Barra is saying there is very interesting, because when you look at this report, as he was saying, the figures here are quite small, really. I know it is a doubling of the passenger numbers on train, but we're still talking about 6% of journeys by passengers would be on train. So 94% will be on road. And that's what the Taoiseach was saying. But also the unification within the Green Party around this message is quite interesting, because Eamon Ryan himself said yesterday that they will be looking at as you said there about bypasses would be looked at, but also that there will be the reallocation of road space. So roads are in this idea of sustainable transport because they're going to create bus corridors and all this. So the unity around this is very frayed. And as you can see there, the electioneering might be coming in already with Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach, trying to set apart his ideas from that of the Green parties.
Michael Fitzmaurice, you might have seen that in Wales they have done the cost-benefit analysis that Barra Rowntree is talking about, and they've arrived at the conclusion that they're not going to build any more new roads. Do you think that that's where a cost-benefit analysis might lead us to?
The first thing is, Philip, that the cost-benefit analysis can be done on many, was done on many things down through the years, and it was proved wrong for the simple reason, if we didn't build a railway from Galway to Dublin, would you, the first day that was ever done, it wouldn't add up. But it has added up down through the years, because, and have a look at our population. We had 1.7 or 8 million people working in 2014 or 15. We have 2.5 million people working. There's more people moving at the moment. You have to speculate to accumulate, and you have to put infrastructure in place. Does a person, and
let's just jump in on that point. Come in there, Barrow Rowntree, in defence of number crunchers, because Michael Fitzmaurice is saying cost benefit analysis just doesn't work.
Do we not build a railway line out to Dublin Airport? We're the embarrassment of Europe that we haven't even a simple railway line to bring people in as far as Connolly Station or Euston Station.
When we're looking at how you spend taxpayers' money, and you've got competing uses for this, so again, we're talking about we need to make huge investments in terms of energy retrofitting, in terms of buses, and it's not about not necessarily spending the money, it's about what is the best use of that money. And to go back to the origins of our railway system, lots of the railways were actually built by private money, which went bankrupt, and you know, the state got the benefit of that subsequently, but it didn't pay off as an investment. And so when we're looking at taxpayers' money, and when you're thinking about what you want to spend that on and what is the best use of it, it's really important that you do this rigorous analysis, because otherwise we end up in situations like with the Children's Hospital, for example, where you have these, and that's a problem with infrastructure.
Hold on, Barry, just hold on 1 second. The Children's Hospital was a bad deal done by people and left an open checkbook to the builders of that hospital. If you do a thing properly, cost it properly, tighten it, like in the construction industry, there's different, and you're well aware of it, different types. There's yellow farm contracts, there's blue farm contracts, it's a different type of contracts. Let's not say that everything should be done like the Children's Hospital. We should know how to do a contract, tie them in, have it tight, and make sure we deliver it. And you can do a PPP, and you can do it over a length of time.
I'm not sure PPP has particularly been shown to be very effective use of taxpayers' money either.
You can do a PPP and own the whole infrastructure afterwards.
Right, but it's really important that we pick the right projects in the first instance as well. We pick the projects with the highest benefits if we're going to spend taxpayers' money, because there are a lot of competing demands, as we'll be talking about when we come to talking about the budget.
Yeah, I know there'll be a lot of different demands. I'm looking at a 30-year project. And let's be honest about this. If you listen to my words at the beginning, I said it's a fantasy book for the simple reason. I'm hearing about railway lines for years and years and years, and they were never done. I've talked to people in Roth Éireann, and they've told me what it will cost to electrify it. So if we're going to do it, we need to budget properly for it. We need to put the same infrastructure. You lift all ships at the same time in the west of Ireland and the south of Ireland, and in the northwest especially. And what you do is you make sure that you budget over a 30-year period. But all we're doing so far is having rail reviews and different documents sent out, talk about them, and then they're thrown up on the shelf together dust.
Is it not fair, Pippa Hackett, exactly what he says? Here we are, talk, when what we need is action.
Well, I mean, there has been action. We've seen a change since this government was formed in terms of, you know, instead of shutting down train lines, we've been reopening one or two. We've certainly been looking at encouraging people onto public transport. We've reduced the cost of public transport port fares by 20%. You know, this has been a really important aspect. We've also introducing like one new bus route every week, and have been doing so. And every bus route that opens across rural Ireland in particular, that's where the need is somewhat greater. People are using them. So when you put the infrastructure in place, when you put the buses in place, people will flock to them. There's a huge demand here. Michael in one sense is right, but we have all of these things we have to achieve. We have such a massive challenge, I mean, not only from a climate action perspective, but also to keep up with our European partners. Go to any most, you know, modern, progressive European countries and cities. I mean, we have not a patch of comparison in terms of public transport systems, and we have to get there.
Pippa Hackett says that Michael Fitzmaurice is right. Michael Fitzmaurice says that he stands behind and in front of Pippa Hackett. This is not the way that I expected today's conversation to go at all.
It's early in the boxing match yet.
It's only a half hour show, Michael.
Well, let's move on to round two then, shall we? You have seen that the Climate Change Advisory Council has said that we're going to miss our climate targets unless urgent action is taken. You've seen Michael Fitzmaurice, what is going on around Europe and indeed around the world. Do you think that we are in a climate emergency?
Well, first of all, climate has changed. It is sad to see, actually, in the last couple of days, especially in Greece. I read on Sky News last night and BBC that a lot of those fires have been set afire, or the government has stated that maliciously, which is scandalous to this world. In the line of the climate bill that came into Ireland, and I voted against it, and now I'm justified for the simple reason, I says, we have signed up to something that was never achievable by 2030. For the simple reason, Philip, there is a lot of new stuff coming on stream. There's a lot of new stuff in the line of the agricultural sector, like mixed species, grasses. There is additives that has worked, mm-hmm. is working in some countries. There's a lot of new stuff coming.
None of which adds up to meeting the targets that the science...
How do you know?
No, wait a minute. Because the EPA says it.
Well, the EPA hasn't got almighty. Well,
Michael, hang on. Let me ask the question before you disagree with me. None of which adds up to what the scientists say needs to be done. Now, do you accept that?
No, I don't accept it for the simple reason. Science is the essence of debate. I remember one time in bogs, and I have good experience on it, when a scientist said that if you go into a bog and 1 pint, it's like a plastic bag, it goes the whole lot of it. We've proved, and science has proved since, and hydrology and ecology has proved that that was totally wrong. So what we have to do and what we are doing in this country, and in fairness to the agricultural sector, if you look at the report, it was positive for the agricultural sector. Philip,
it actually wasn't, because what it said was that fertilizer use was down, and it was down because of price sensitivity. But otherwise, all of the other indicators were that the sector was increasing its
emissions. First of all, it was down, was it? That's the question. Was it down? It was. Was transport up, down or up? It was up. But the reality of it is, you cannot sign up to something unless you have your foundation right. We have gone into signing up to basically targets and figures. First of all, I am years talking about it, that we have 7% more hedgerows and trees in this country than what we have accounted for. That's the first thing. The second thing is, you do not drop an X today and say everything is going to change. It is going to take a number of years, in my opinion, right, in the line of offshore wind, in my opinion, to be 2032, 2033, in the line of changes in mixed species grasses. And you have to test all these things out. It's going to be 7 or 10 years. I have said very clearly, we are going to miss our targets in 2030. And that's it. And people voted for something that was unachievable. It's like me saying I'll win the Olympic 100-metre dash when I haven't a notion of doing it.
Pippa Hackett, it's unachievable.
Listen, it's a massive challenge. No one discounts that, and nobody has ever, you know, discounted that the challenge is there.
Should we do it the way that Michael Fitzmaurice
wants
to do it?
No, I think we have to keep trying and keep working at what we know can work. Fossil fuels are ingrained into Irish society so much, you know, whether it's energy, transport, construction, agriculture, you name it, we're so tied to it, and we have to transform how we do all of those things. And, you know, that's you know, at a societal level, at an economic level, all of the challenge is massive, and no one has disputed that. But we have made massive inroads, to be honest, in the 3 years, despite how long COVID went on for, despite the war in Ukraine. You know, we've seen transformation in terms of solar, and you know, there's 500 homes putting up solar panels
But do you hear what Michael Fitzmaurice is saying? And you know that people now would say that the new form of climate denial is climate delay. Is that what he's doing?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's unfair to say. I mean, look, everyone admits, and you know, the recent Climate Change Advisory Council's report saying, look, it's really challenging to meet our targets. And we have them set and legally binding. But we know some of the things that work. We don't have all the science. We don't have all the data yet. We accept we don't. But that doesn't mean we wait and wait and wait and wait until we think we have all the data. We move with what we have, you know, and you know, Michael's talking about agriculture. When you look at the transformation in terms of the Common Agricultural Policy, most of its payments now have an environmental focus. You know, that was fought hard, you know, across the board to get that agreement. Supports from farmers, we have supports from farmers to move away from fertilizer use. And yes, those reductions, as you said, since between 21 and 22 were due to reduce use of fertilizer, but we have to incentivize that for farmers. We're incentivizing more
organic farming.
Just come in on one thing there? I just want to pick you up on something that Mike Fitzmaurice said, that it's climate delay is the new type of climate denial. Michael Fitzmaurice has been involved in rewetting of bogs with the national parks and the turf cutters. This media spin that comes out from the likes of yourselves and others, that you're either right wing or you're a denier.
I don't
accept that, and I want to be very clear on that. I have given the I've made it clear what farmers have done. They are making an honest effort. So let's give them a bit of praise. Don't be always trying to kill the cow.
No. Hang on a second. Your very opening words in answer to this question were, sure, climate has always changed. And the fires in Athens
are being started by people. But you're talking about, did it always change? Yes or no?
Do you agree that the climate...
Did it always change, yes or no? That's the question.
Yes, but it has not always changed as a result of human actions. That's the point, Michael, that you don't seem to be accepting.
Human beings are on the earth a long time. By people living, the changed climate. There's no point in saying, so we have more people in the world. So obviously, are we going to say, like Kamala Harris done the other day, that we need to reduce population or something, for God's sake?
Aisling, is Michael giving expression to something that is widely held as an opinion in Leinster House, but perhaps not as forcefully or vigorously expressed as he's doing it, or is he in a minority?
Potentially, we're not getting maybe everyone's full expression of their opinion around this issue, but also there are plenty of people to appease your constituents who have different opinions and different things that they're trying to achieve in their life. They've got farmers, they've got people using roads and all those sorts of things. And I know the Minister brought up the Climate Change Advisory Council earlier this week, who also warned that the pace of government implementation of policy was not enough to face to combat the existential threat. So the pace of policy. So you have there Michael Fitzmaurice coming from a farming perspective saying, you know, they're frustrated with being pointed the finger at. And then you've the Climate Change Advisory Council saying that transport is the area where we're going to overshoot the target that they were highlighting this week. So you can understand the frustration by people. However, the true, I suppose, expressions of whether people are taking this incredibly seriously, I think it's very hard for people now to go against any of the very stark warnings we're seeing. Last month, June was the hottest June on record. This month again we've set another temperature for the hottest July. We're seeing wildfires. Every season we go through now is not without an extreme weather event in some regard. So it is much harder for people to flatly deny, but at the same time people may, as you say there, climate delay could be a perspective here. Whether people really understand how crucial, how existential the threat is and how imminent it could possibly be is another thing. One TD I was talking to this week brought up the study that about the Gulf Stream, that could be potentially facing collapse as early as 2025, which actually, you know, in climate science would be quite a smaller study, I suppose, and there are some questions over it. But for a TD to just bring that up to me in conversation, it kind of shows that the climate science has really reached a lot of people. So it's much harder for you to flatly deny.
There's one thing that I want to make very clear. There seems to be this thing out here, and when you talk to people on the ground, it's do as I say, not as I do, for the simple reason. At the moment, in the minister's constituency and on the side of mine, there's the new engines, jet engines are going in. There's a 1 million litre diesel tanks going in. For those that last, I think it's 50 minutes for 100,000 litres if they're put into action. Yes. So the government is saying one thing, what Paddy and Mary down the road needs to do, and they need to get an electric car that they haven't the price of. They need to do X, Y, and Z, and at the same time, the government is shoving in diesel.
Michael, you know full well that is backup capacity.
Yeah, but it's going to be used.
No, it'll be used if it's needed to be used.
Is it diesel or is it not?
I understand they are diesel run, but that is backup capacity. If and when the wind isn't blowing, the sun isn't shining, you know how this works and you know how long this infrastructure takes to put in place.
It's actually 5 years there's all that. We're going to spend all this money for 5 years.
No, but we are on a road now to ramp up our renewable energy supply to our country. Not only to supply our own, well, you do know it well and you can take a cynical view if you want.
No, I'm not taking a cynical view, but that's the reality. Why wasn't the gas pipeline brought to it? At least that could have been done.
Listen, I'm not an engineer.
Engineering. It's in Ballinasloe.
I want to bring Barra Rowntree in here because, Barra, this is all really quite simple. If you wanted to meet the targets, if you wanted to do what science says needs to be done, you just spend billions. You spend billions building the deep water port so that we construct the offshore turbines. You spend billions retrofitting people's homes for them because they're just not going to be able to afford to do it. You spend billions getting farmers to reduce their productivity because that's really the only way to crack that particular nut. Can that money be found?
Well, if it was only the case that we could just spend billions, it would be great because we have the corporation tax windfalls and so we could spend them and that would be great. We could just finance the transition that way. But it's not just money. And this is, I think, one thing that the Climate Change Advisory Council highlighted during the week. They point to, you know, they say we need urgent action if we're going to meet our very ambitious targets. And let's leave aside those targets. But if we want to meet them, we're going to need urgent action. And one of the things they point that we will need urgent action on is actually the planning system. So a bit of that is resourcing it better. It's definitely under-resourced. We all know that it takes too long for decisions to be made. But I think there's also going to be an interesting tension in the years ahead between rules and restrictions and regulations that come about with environmental objectives. So, you know, you have to have an environmental impact assessment, you have to have a Natura impact statement done on lots of these big projects. And that's starting to hold up some of the huge projects that we need to happen. So we see it in the energy field. But I think one of the examples that I find particularly just startling is Bus Connects, right? So we have all the Bus Connects schemes that were announced and went through lots of rounds of public consultation. And if you look, I was awake one night, unable to sleep, so I went on and looked at, say, the Swords Bus Connects scheme. And if you go through that, there's more than 2,000 pages of an environmental impact assessment mm-hmm. for something which is mostly reallocating road space from an existing road to buses, from cars to buses. Okay. And yet that needs, and so we have this situation kind of in many places. And I think it also impacts on housing, right, as well, and our ability to deliver that. That the government has put in place regulations and restrictions which inhibit it from actually delivering on what it wants to do. And I think we need to have a bit of a conversation about that. I don't think that's necessarily accepted across the board and isn't discussed.
Let's move that on, because the kind of the logical conclusion of that is perhaps, Minister, something that's going to sound a little bit anti-democratic. Less public consultation is what is needed. More executive action by government and just saying, this is what needs to be done.
Look, it is a massive challenge, and certainly we've seen it across the board in terms of cases taken against Ireland where we've, you know, breached environmental requirements and laws and so forth. But there does need to be a broader conversation. It might fit well into our land use review that we're about to embark on phase two of that, where we need to have a collective vision of what we want, you know, and this, you know, the land use is largely about what we use our land for and what it needs to deliver.
You're dodging my question.
I think what we do need to do is agree trade-offs where they're allowed. I think we can't have a utopia. We can't have every single we can't deliver on all our, like, if you like, all our infrastructure, mm-hmm. all our transport, all our wind infrastructure.
Does this mean in practical terms that I as a citizen cannot hold up a big infrastructure project because I have the means to do so by taking a judicial review case? Should I be excluded from doing
that? No, I'm not
like
saying
that.
I don't think we can exclude people, but we do need to look at how the impact of those, because if the overall, you know, if as a society we determine we want to hit our climate targets or we want to hit our renewable energy targets, and we also want to preserve nature. I mean, we've just had the Nature Restoration Law in the European Union level as well. I truly believe we cannot have it all, but we have to have the very best of all of that we can. And we have to agree where we're willing to make the trade-offs.
This is all a bit woolly.
No, it isn't, because this is the challenge
one second, Michael. Let's just see if we can get a straight answer here. More or less public consultation to get the climate action agenda implemented. Yes or no?
I think we absolutely need public consultation. But if public consultation is going to slow up everything forevermore for years to come, then we have to look at how that's done. So I think there are some sort of analysis or you know, part of the conversation needs to look at how we do that public consultation. Because you, as you say, I mean, and I'm the minister responsible for forestry, and Michael, let's not talk about forestry on this today. But sorry,
there's three years of the worst record since the state began at Tenton Forestry, and you can't.
But the challenges in forestry slowed it down to the state where we were not felling any trees, and there was it was going to shut down the sector. So we looked at ways of reviewing that. We changed legislation to help facilitate it, not quite to stop, shut down any public consultation, but just to make, you know, the system to work a bit better. And I think we have to look at that in the overall
Michael
planning
Fitzmaurice.
Review.
Yeah, the first thing is with the last 3 years is the lowest planting ever in the history of the state. I think Pippa, you're
well.
The industry has actually said they have no confidence in what you've done. Second of all, today, if I want to plant, or any farmer wants to plant an acre or 5 acres of trees, you cannot actually get a license, for the simple reason we haven't our state aid over the thing. But to go back to Barry on what he said.
Barry Rowntree, sorry.
He's 100% right, for the simple reason. At the moment, and whether we need to be honest with people here, in the line of what we have let our masters bring into us from Europe, in the line of the Habitats Directive, you have to do EIA, you have to do appropriate assessment, you have to do all the different stuff, for the simple reason we will be brought to the ECJ, the European Court of Justice.
I don't think that's quite true. But it's how we've implemented it, right? Because there's other countries who can do this, and I think that shows that it's not the EU rules.
They haven't a brigade that brings you to the courts every day of the week. We seem to have a lot of them.
Well, that's something we're going to have to deal with, right? It's just so challenging what we need to do. And you do see it, and you see it in housing as well.
I've dealt with the Habitats Directive.
Any big infrastructural project or project full stop, it's massively challenging.
Yeah, but hold on. I remember years ago, in 2009 and 10, when people thought that there should be white coats brought for me, when I mentioned that roads, airports, not alone bogs, we were the first in the firing line, and thank God we sorted ourselves out, airports, roads, every single type of infrastructure, even building a house, that the Habitats Directive, it has crippled us, the ECJ has put us into a straitjacket, and unless that's resolved, we will never make progress in any
planning. Yes, but the challenge, Michael, is that we're also facing a collapse in our biodiversity.
Funny thing to say, Minister, that I've talked to a lot of planners, and this is a funny thing to say, and we heard that nearly every biodiversity was gone in the country. I hear
no
score.
That's hyperbole.
But hold on. In all the acre schemes in the CPs so far, in talking to the planners that are doing Trojan work around the country, I am hearing that it is scoring 8 out of 10, which is fabulous.
All right, we'll leave it there. Michael Fitzmaurice, Pippa Hackett, Aisling Maloney and Barra Rowntree, thank you all very much. Today's programme was produced by Barbara Feeney. The series producer is Alistair McConnell, researcher Kieran Dunn, broadcast coordinator Louise Kerr-Ross, on sound Harry Bookless. Have the very best of weekends, folks. Now it's over to Ray Cuddy.